Microphone check. 1, 2. The microphone check. 1, 2, 1, 2. The microphone check. I got my headphones tuned between two different AM stations, and my briefcase is full of declassified information. Declassified, declassified, and I'm reading it under the lens of your radio. I'm dissecting it and bleeding it. I read the world for breakfast, and after lunch I write it. I let me get me down, and then I stand back up and fight it. I read the news today, oh boy, oh boy. I know linguistics, statistics, pundits, and mystics. I voted for Ralph Nader. I read Dots and Raider. I got 1,000 signatures and sent them to Darth Vader. I'm reading U.S. News and World Report, Time Life, and The Post. I know more than other DJs because I read the most. And when I squint to the west, I can see Afghanistan. I put my head between my knees and I can see Iran. I get documents online and then I analyze them. They knows I'm out there waiting so they don't declassify them. I bug the White House and I bug the Pentagon. In the filling in my molar, I got my de-scrambler on. I got the truth. I got Paul Muth. We got better lines than Haydn Carruth. We put our 11 cents in, just like Marx and Lenin. Paul's like Carl McCartney, but I'm John Lennon. We'd love to turn you on. I say I want a revolution, and I want to stop it all. I finished all 3 volumes up of Marx's Capital. You know, everything that old boy wrote is up on my shelf, and every single bit I translated myself. I'm reading and I'm learning, and when the tide is turning, it'll warm my heart in part to see the dollar bills burning. They weren't built in a day, but all roads lead to Rome. I'll do fine just as the Romans with my main man, Noam. I'd like to tell you a story about a little man, if I can. A gnome whose name was Chomsky. I'm MCS Tazaruk. I got a voice like milk. I'm the best dressed man you ever heard. Can you hear this tie? It's silk.
It's mid-morning on the last day of the week, and you're listening to News from Neptune. Carl Estabrook and Paul Muth discussing the news of the week and its coverage by the media. Archives of this show in free software formats are available at newsfromneptune.com. Thanks to the technical expertise of Dr. No, Jeff Nicholson Owens.
And Dr. No is on the job. We appreciate that very much. It's the 22nd of April, and hardly a man is now alive remembers this last week, right, Paul? Or at least that's last week in its historical context. Thinking of the 19th of April, Lexington and Concord, and several other events on that date. Which
did you have any Virginia history from that time? Oh, that's right. Remarkably, they weren't on the forefront of the revolution, yeah. Were they?
Well, I mean, and the Kansas City bombing, of course, which was specifically chosen to be on the 19th of April. The folks who did that, McVeigh, who was executed by the U.S. government, and his co-conspirators, who probably did exist. I mean, it's probably more likely that McVeigh had co-conspirators even beyond the fellow who was in jail for it than Lee Harvey Oswald did.
Secrets to his grave.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Insisted that he did it.
That's right. That's right.
And now we have this caricature of a conspirator in Massawe. We finally did talk about him a little bit.
Yeah. I suggested when we had our contemporary Rosenberg case with Massawe, but the difference is that Rosenberg, the Rosenbergs weren't crazy. Massawe clearly is.
A show trial for sure.
Yep.
Well, let's see. Yeah, what else to review in more contemporary history? I guess we might hearken back to other things.
Well, I was thinking about anniversaries here, and we did miss another one last week that we should have talked about. 90 years ago last Saturday was the Easter Rising in Dublin. And I noticed that the sole mention that actually was brought to my attention by our friend Francis Boyle, who mentioned it this week, and I saw almost no commemoration of the 1916 uprising in Dublin against British rule this week, except for the fact that Ben & Jerry's has brought out a new ice cream flavor called Black and Tan. I'm not putting you on.
That's the wrong side.
Well, exactly, and it's caused a great, it's caused some consternation in Ireland. The Black and Tans were the basically the militias that the Brits put together from First World War soldiers more than anything else, and sent them off to Ireland to kill Irish and use the English racism against the Irish as a motivation, and so the Black and Tans very quickly got the sort of reputation that American troops have in Iraq right now for brutal racism, and it's the
Royal
after 90
Ulster
years they're not that's right
yeah.
for after 90 years they're not very
I'm
well
just,
they're
I
not
heard
very
a fair
well.
Amount of coverage, and now I'm realizing it's probably because I listened to Boston radio on the internet some in Boston. The fact that there were there was sort of a military factor in the parade. There were jeeps and all sorts of big show of force, 2,000 strong military parade for the Easter Rising, which apparently struck some people as a little bit odd because it had never been done before. But then it is it isn't the 100th year anniversary. What do you say?
90th, 1916. So Paul, I'm always impressed at the way our listeners are, on, in fact, omniscient and know far better than we what, in fact, we're saying. A listener just called to say that I had referred to the April 19th, 1995 Kansas City bombing instead of the Oklahoma City bombing.
There we go.
And so, and absolutely correctly.
The
caller is right.
Some people don't take time to correct us, so we appreciate when they do.
Yes, indeed.
And you can write Carl at newsfromneptune.com.
Actually, write you at newsfromneptune. Paul at newsfromneptune.com, too.
I anticipate making no mistakes today.
Oh, well, there is that.
Anyway, taking my tongue out of my cheek. Speaking of mistakes, we have I didn't read it. Somebody who's actually was politically pretty nice on a discussion show suggested that Dana Milbank for the Post of the Times wrote a fairly funny article about called The Host of Indignities, about the fiasco that was the reception for well, it wasn't a state reception, though, was it? It was a lunchtime gathering. So this is, it seems to me that there's not going to be a heckler of Schwarzenegger in California today. You wonder how that Falun Gong person actually got in. They must have been connected in some way. I mean, we know that supposedly the journalists allow other journalists in, but I'm sure that's not true. We know from that what was the fellow's forgettable fellow's name who had the porn site as well as the special audiences at the presidential press conferences.
Oh, right, from the Washington Press Corps. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah,
you're talking about so to speak, who's in town, who Jin Tao, who's in town,
who's on first.
Yeah, exactly.
They didn't get it down very. It was a bit of a comedic review, I think.
Yeah, that's. My favorite point was that apparently they announced the anthem they played as that of the Republic of China,
right?
The formal name of Taiwan, of course.
None of which got over to China.
I gather the CNN feed was being turned on and off quite rapidly,
yeah,
so they would get.
Of course,
the
fact that it goes blank. They're sophisticated enough not to have that kind of thing interruption happen.
So exactly.
People know what to. It's sort of the tale of two Washingtons. We have Washington State and then Washington D.C. It seems like the Boeing and the Microsoft people know how to throw a party, whereas the federal
government doesn't. Huh?
Yeah, maybe we're going to have to privatize the. Foreign power. Oh, we've
you mean we
that.
Have it? Yeah, exactly. That's right.
It's exactly. Interesting, though, that Gates is now in Vietnam too. Mm-hmm. So I guess he's looking for lower wage, higher repression workforce.
Right. And I mean, Vietnam right now has a growth rate equivalent to China's. You know, on that basis, that is, they're making money the old-fashioned way, exploiting the working class.
Yeah.
And it's that who won that war after all, Paul, in Vietnam. You know. It seems to me that the U.S. Achieved its war aims there. We made them over in our image and likeness. Right? We had to kill about 4 million in order to do it, but it worked. And,
it took a couple of extra years, but we did keep all that South China Sea oil off the market for quite a while, too.
Well, maybe that's the issue. I don't know. Maybe they'd like to have it back right now. Oil, what, top $75 a barrel this week? And gold is high for a good long time. The stock market hit a six-year high this week. I mean, there are some people who are thinking that money can be made out of coming bad times. I think that's the thought.
Well, the rich always do that.
I mean, that's right.
You sell short, you can always make money if you got some to start with. And it's just what happens to the rest, the grass when the elephants dance, or whatever it's called, fight, or whatever.
Do you think the oil prices and the prospects of major economic dislocation is going to dissuade the madmen in Washington from taking their military action against Iran? What's your take on the Iran attack?
I don't know. Irrational calculus, as yeah. Walden Bellow said the other day, may not pertain.
That's the problem, isn't it? Yeah. That's exactly right.
And I've also heard some analysis just saying that, partially that, giving a little more credit to the Bush administration in some bizarre way, is that, that's not actually what I want to say, but things will spin out of control if things, as they can. I mean, so again, that's not a rational process, mm-hmm. but it seems to me there's a non-rational process that's already decided it should happen. One thing that, another thing from the scenario with, but I just got past a note that brings us back to Ireland.
Fight aphasia, my friend.
No, it's just a big. With the other thing that was recounted from the WHO visit was, well, they didn't come around and agree to isolate Iran the way we want them to. While
of course not.
While WHO was in D.C., Jacques Chirac was in the Maghreb again. And the last time he went down to Algiers, he was hailed.
Yep.
The hero, because he was opposing the impending war, and now he's down in Morocco 2 years later, and one of the things he said is, we will not countenance a military attack on Iran. I mean, that's not exactly the accurate translation, but it's mm-hmm. pretty close. So at the same time that the Chinese were not coming around, and I saw very little comment of the Mitterrand remark. Well, I think it was in the middle of the night with the BBC.
But there you are again on whether the rational calculus really applies here, given that the American administration has got the bit in its teeth on this matter and seems to be charging ahead regardless of what anyone thinks. In fact, one of the things they're quite concerned about is the Iranian-Chinese connection. I mean, there is being constructed, even as we watch, an Asian energy grid, so to speak, that includes Russia and China, and their idea is that Iran is to be one of the major sources for their desire for energy resources, or one of the major sources of their energy system, with India playing a major role in transit, etc., on the matter. Now, this is what's behind this peculiar movement by this administration in doing a nuclear deal with India. We want to keep India out of this Asian energy connection, and China, of course, very much wants Iran in it, That really accounts for China's support, insofar as it exists, for Iran over against American and EU pressure. I think that's the important game that's being played here. But the old Nixon madman theory, I think, is surfacing in Washington, that Bush and Cheney et al. Are saying, look, we're going to do something against Iran regardless of what anyone thinks, European, Chinese, otherwise.
Yeah. Well, the French coming out against it the way Chirac did might actually
sweeten the pot.
Cheney is exactly. even more excited about the prospect of
all the more reason to
going
do it.
Ahead.
Yeah. There were five Nobel laureates wrote to the president this week saying, that he can't possibly consider going back on the effective ban on the use of nuclear weapons since 1945, and that he daren't. But nevertheless. Bush on Tuesday said that, and their favorite phrase, all options are on the table, as someone wrote, does that include genocide? Well, I don't know. It's all options, according to the White House, and what they might do. Since there's no effective opposition in the country, Democrats such as Joe Lieberman and Barack Obama have said that, of course, surgical strikes on Iran are better than allowing the mullahs to have of nuclear weapons. I'm quoting Obama there. And as a result, there has been no serious opposition from the opposition party. This is.
Yeah. I mean, well, I recounted Kerry's visit on Meet the Press last week, where he said this idea of using nukes, tech nukes, is should be taken off the table. Everything else apparently should be left on the table, but tech nukes should be taken off the table. So that is the extent of opposition, apparently. Counterpunch.site adds their website of the week. Last week or this week has something from the Union of Concerned Scientists, which is UCSUSA.org. They have a little flash movie taken from information from the Pentagon itself on the utility of nuclear bunker buster boom, and it's so ridiculous to even consider using them after you've seen this thing. I really recommend people check it out if they're web capable to the extent. It's not a big movie and doesn't have a lot of detail, but it explains that even a good attack on Isfahan, I guess, would probably contaminate large regions of India. That's how how useful they are. But you know, rattling the sword, swashbuckling and saber rattling. That's
there
it.
We go.
If you're rattling the saber, you have to be able to invoke the use of nuclear weapons. Apparently,
that seems to be right. You're listening to News from Neptune, Carl Estabrook and Paul Muth on talking about the news of the week.
I want to acknowledge our regular listener, Jim. He suggested that we should call the Black and Tans imperialist revolutionaries, which bothers me a little bit, not racist ethnic cleansers.
A little of both,
imperialist revolutionaries is contradictory in terms to my mind. So,
imperialist revolutionaries. I'm not sure. I'm not sure quite what's being suggested there. What was being done by Britain in the early years of the 20th century was simply, quote, restoring order, close quote, in its oldest colony, colony that goes back to the time of Henry II. And what I was saying was that the reason the Black and Tans, the British militia, has such a wretched reputation in Ireland was that they were recruited and encouraged on the basis of suppressing the subhuman Irish, that racism was both an inducement and to join the Black and Tans and the attitude with which they fought. So
their name for the color of the uniform, which was improvised from something black from World War I wear, and then something they got from the British, I guess, in another route. But they were pretty much a militia in some regards, but they were acting rather closely on the British. Anyway, that's all I'll say, because I don't know. But yeah, 98th, wonder what they'll do for, or 90th anniversary. Yeah. Well, that.
What do you make of the fact that the news reports, the mainstream media leads with a government in Iraq?
Well, you know, they've been waiting for a while. Now we're going to celebrate, and we'll see how long it lasts, and whether they can actually fill up a cabinet, whether it matters anyway. You know, there's still a lot of people in Iraq, not just Sunnis, that believe that the constitution was passed through corruption of the vote in Kirkuk and Mosul, if I'm recollecting, in the north, that particular province is that Nineveh.
The important point that is not being mentioned, it seems to me, in the mainstream media accounts of the emergence of apparently a prime minister in Iraq, is the fact that the reason al-Jafari is not prime minister is the American opposition to him. This is the guy who claimed at one point to have read Noam Chomsky. You know?
Like him a lot.
But,
yeah.
Well, I don't know. But, I mean, the news reports have all been cast in terms of the difficulty of these peculiar Iraqis working out their differences and getting a government together, as if there is no American presence at all. They don't even notice the fact that the reason the government wasn't formed was that that the U.S. said, look, Jafari, the candidate for prime minister of the largest faction in the parliament, cannot be prime minister, that the U.S. vetoed him. And now then, the question was, how far was the elected government going to oppose the United States diktat on the structure of the government? Look, the government exists at all only because of the massive nonviolent resistance in Iraq that brought the elections about. The U.S. trumpets the fact that it had brought elections to Iraq. Well, it didn't. When the U.S. invaded Iraq, the then proconsul wanted to stage elections right away. The Bush-Cheney Bush-Cheney administration said, no way, that's not going to happen, and removed Garner and put in Kissinger's boy, Bremer, to preside over the American occupation. They delayed the elections. They weren't going to have it at all for fear of something just like this would happen. That is, that elements would emerge that we don't like. Democracy in the American lexicon always means a government that is willing to do what the U.S. tells it to do and is friendly to business. And if those two characteristics are not there, it is by definition not a democracy. So the U.S. was bound and determined there was not going to be an election until the massive demand on the part of the Shiite communities, mainly, Shiite parties mainly, brought the election about. Okay, so not surprisingly, a Shiite prime minister emerges from this process and the U.S. vetoes him. So for 150 days or whatever it is since the election, there has been no government, and we ascribe it to infighting in Iraq. Well, that's literally true if you understand that one of the major infighter is the United States of America.
Let's see.
I want to go back to a bit about the Iraqi government that we will be hearing
about
in this coming week. Yeah, we're constructing it. We'll hear about in this coming week. This man who apparently will be prime minister, Jawad al-Maliki, spent the good bit of the Saddam Hussein years in Syria. Interesting, given that the Washington plan, such as it is, has always included a attacks on Syria and Iran as well as Iraq, and his connections, as I say, are to Syria, and he was quoted at some length as opposing the U.S. invasion, even though he had been basically run out of Iraq by Saddam Hussein before the fact. So the guy, represents that Shiite resistance that in some ways can be as hostile to the U.S. as it was to the former regime in Baghdad.
I went to Juan Cole's blog to see what he had on it, and his insight was that the Sunnis that are accepting him are saying, well, he's not much different from al-Jafari, but he may be a little more pragmatic and we can work with him. I think what came down was the length of time that it was taking to construct a government was not worth it. For the U.S. really wanted this guy who was World Bank associated, right? I forget his name at this point.
This is sort of the Haitian model.
It's the World Bank weekend, and there was a vigil outside of Wolfowitz's house in Chevy Chase, Maryland last night as part of the demonstrations and conferences that are going on in D.C. As we speak, I'm sorry,
Wolfowitz is my family used to live in Chevy Chase. It's actually a very nice place, and I'm sorry that they're,
they got
Wolfowitz
such bad neighbors.
Was allowed in. Yes, exactly.
Well, he was probably over at his woman friend's house, who's this half Saudi, half Lebanese woman that he left. She worked at the World Bank and has convenient office down the hall or something. As the way I confirmed that with Jeffrey Sinclair. We haven't noted his visit. We should do that.
We should indeed. In his new book, Grand Theft Pentagon, which we recommend highly.
I was insomniac last night, and I heard Vandana Shiva on the BBC
I did too.
Last night.
You and I are not sleeping for maybe the same reason.
She
I heard her too.
Brilliant.
Well, and they
great.
Did their best to put a lid on her throughout the discussion. This is a BBC discussion on World Trade.
You could hear her hemming in the background a lot.
Exactly. Yes. I thought it was quite
it's
interesting.
Worth seeking out. It was
two right wing business types and a moderator on the BBC and Vandana Shiva.
And the BBC is awful about neoliberalism. They are they do not countenance. The idea that, it could be something called economic democracy, there could be, why, she just cut to the quick, why are you people talking about what's best for India? Don't you think she'd leave that to the Indians?
and had some specific suggestions of her own. Yes, that was very worthwhile.
She also mentioned this bilateral agreement that I hadn't really heard about, but she claims that both Monsanto and Walmart are on the board of this oversight committee that was established after the visit of Bush, you know, with the nuclear carrot, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And while we're talking about,
if you want to look at it.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. Yes. While we're talking about aspects of the world economy, when you mentioned before, you know, the spike in oil prices and so forth. Doug Henwood of the Left Business Observer did a regression on Bush popularity figures and the price of gasoline, and there's a very high correlation.
Yeah.
And so Doug is now suggesting that the spike in gasoline prices, which by certainly there, is going to redound to the discredit of the administration as a sort of leading indicator of what people are thinking about
the administration. It's only fitting that the oligarchy get that greedy.
That's right. Mm. Fox News, yes indeed, Fox News had Bush's popularity this week, which is approval rating popularity, his approval rating at 33%, the lowest ever. Even more interesting poll result, I thought, this week was the LAT Bloomberg poll, which showed that now approaching 60% of Americans think that the Iraq war was unnecessary. Now, you know, we'd like to go inside that a little more. I mean, how many of those people think they actually were lied to by the Bush administration and so forth? But the point is the directions the numbers are moving. Compare that with just a few months ago.
Again, polls don't look at motivation of the opposition. There are some Republicans that have bailed out when he introduced Medicare Part D for dumb, you know. That was just too much money and too much of an acknowledgement that the government had some responsibility for medical care for whomever, in this case the elderly, which is...
And we should work on that, yes. Mm. The war is now costing, latest estimate in this morning's papers, is $10 billion a month. And after, you know, in the immortal words of Senator Dirksen of Illinois, a billion here, a billion there, before long you're talking real money.
Yep.
And they're talking real money in regard to, and it's having an effect, and people are noticing. The number of people to whom it becomes clear now that the vast amounts of money that the government is spending on this war and the international economic readjustments it has to make to do that mean that there is nothing for social services, even at the minimal level they exist in this country right now, to say nothing of their expansion. And that, of course, was part of the idea. And people are noticing that. And that has some importance, Paul.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to mention from Jeffrey Sinclair's talk is he says, watch for the Safafian trial. Safafian is one of the guys that's coming down with the Abramoff testimony, apparently. He was second person in charge of procurement, which means he's the guy that put his name on the final contracts. And if you don't think that's a powerful position in Washington, you haven't been watching how the money gets spent. I have a feeling there'll be a continuance till after the election, Safafian, unless they really put the pressure on him and he flips and decides to bring some other people down, which would be an interesting thing that Jeffrey said that is not out of the realm of possibility. He didn't see it as particularly likely, but I think it'll be punted past the election after so many things are.
Well, there's some interesting court cases coming up. We were talking about the fact that General Jeffrey Miller, who ran the Guantanamo concentration camp and was sent to Abu Ghraib to Gitmoize it, in the words of the Defense Department, has taken basically the Fifth Amendment before the military courts. There is a military law equivalent to the Fifth Amendment and refused to testify about his activities for fear it would incriminate him. Now he is being forced to testify, which
taking another kind
being
of fifth
done,
now, I'm thinking.
Which is apparently possible under the Universal Code of Military Justice, as they call it, remembering the classic remark that military justice is to justice as military music is to music. But they are prosecuting a sergeant. I mean, it's always the enlisted ones who have been prosecuted for the torture scandal, which, as anyone with half an eye can see, is coming from the top of the Bush administration. They're prosecuting a sergeant for the use of dogs in intimidating witnesses and using them against detainees, prisoners. The judge has said, on the 17th of May, General Miller is to show up and talk about what he knows here and be subject to cross-examination. So maybe we'll hear something from Jeffrey.
We were linking to that, to the suggestion, was it this week or last, that Rummy should not just resign, he should be pulled to the
Absolutely.
Dock. There's been a Freedom of Information suit that dumped a whole bunch of documents, and apparently they're still sorting through them and looking for some other stories. This is on Salon.com,
right?
And I thought I clipped the name of the author, but the title of it is "What Did Rummy Know?"
Yes, well, and Human Rights Watch is actually the ones who are calling for a special prosecutor for the Secretary of Defense, with specific reference to the case of Mohammed al-Qahtani. This is a guy they had at Gitmo that apparently Rumsfeld was personally involved in how he should be interrogated. In other words, calling up Miller on the phone, you know, every couple of days to see how it's going. He recognizes what they do to get Mohammed al-Qahtani to talk. Well, Human Rights Watch has taken up the case and is saying that this is not only an example of the torture policy, the illegal treatment of prisoners that has been that's characterized this administration. Here was Rumsfeld himself immediately involved, and something should be done about
so
that.
So Miller's got something on Rummy. It's not germane to the case of the dog handler,
but it may come up.
But I would hope it would be allowed to be. So it might even come out sooner, in the middle of May.
Yep.
Might heat up
exactly
for Rummy.
That would be nice indeed. On News from Neptune, Carl Estabrook and Paul Muth talking about the news of the week. The local anti-war group AWARE, anti-war, anti-racism effort, conducts demonstrations in downtown Champaign on the first Saturday of every month from 2 to 4 in the afternoon against the war in Iraq and against the war in Iran, we might say, too, and attendant social evils. They invite people who would like to participate in that demonstration to come join them. AWARE advertises itself as an open organization. You're welcome to join their meetings and talk about how one goes about opposing this war and related social ills. AWARE points out that as a result of action by citizens in both Urbana and Champaign at the annual township meeting, you will be able to vote on withdrawal from Iraq and the impeachment of the administration on the fall ballot. When you go into the election booth in November, the voting booth in November, you will find on your ballot two questions on this matter. Shall the United States withdraw immediately from Iraq, and shall the administration be impeached? And the local voters will be able to express their opinions on that.
Urbana includes something about bringing the National Guard home. I guess if you're bringing all the troops immediately, you're bringing them back.
But there's a third question in Urbana in about the governor of Illinois and his responsibilities to the National Guard troops from Illinois. Yes,
this is something that I heard even on the right-wing talk show Penny for Your Thoughts. Somebody calling in and suggesting that what are the Guard doing over there anyway? And I called in and mentioned that it was actually the Reagan era with the Central American use of the National Guard in Central America, that, and the Montgomery Amendment that allowed the Guard to be nationalized at the drop of the hat at the whim of the president.
Paul, the statistic that shocked me most this week was the information casually released by the federal government that the military tribunals in our concentration camp in Cuba have cleared 30% of the Gitmo prisoners, they're not going to let them out.
Yeah,
they're cleared and so forth, but, you know, it's just not convenient. I mean, you're cleared, you'd think you open the jail door and they go out if they're cleared. No, they can't do that, says the federal government. After all, these are foreigners. We can't just let them loose. We can't let them loose in the United States. I perish the thought. And we don't know quite where to send them because, you know, various difficulties, like they might be killed when we send them to where we kidnapped them from in the first place. But this is shocking. interesting poll. This is 140-some people that this these kangaroo courts that the administration established in Guantanamo have said, yeah, that's right, you shouldn't be here. You're not a terrorist.
Does the Pentagon, speaking of redress, though, does the Pentagon have any way of getting the money back from the people they paid off to turn these people in, which was a lot of what happened? Obviously, I'm being satirical.
Or what about the compensation for those 140-some people who have been held for several years now in a prison with no justification whatsoever? I mean, you know, these are war crimes of fairly significant sort.
The Uyghur case was being tested at the Supreme Court, and
Supreme Court turned it down this week. These are two they're actually Chinese. They're Uyghur people, the Muslim people from Northwest China, but they were apparently picked up in Pakistan. They are in Guantanamo, and their case with, I think it's Human Rights Watch, I forget who it was actually was backing their case, but their case in following the torturous process established by the Congress through the federal courts came to the Supreme Court this week, and the Supreme Court said, no thanks, we don't want to bother. We're not going to do anything with it. The government, the federal government's position on these guys is, yes, they're not terrorists, but we can't send them back to China because they'll be killed. We can't send them to Thailand, you know, as one of the places suggested. Therefore, they'll have to stay in jail. Their lawyers say, you got to let them out of jail. And the government, the federal government says, oh, we can't do that.
And
so there they sit.
And it was approved in one case. They appealed it, and the Supreme Court didn't take
exactly.
Cert.
That's right.
This is divisive inside the right. I mean, you know, there are some people that are very angry at Bush for apologizing about the disruption by the Falun Gong woman, but there are also people around the Washington Times that have been championing the Uyghurs, and why don't they sponsor?
That's a funny. Well, exactly. Well, you know, I mean, send them to Chevy Chase. That's where most of the people in the Washington Times live. I mean, who edit the Washington Times live. The people, the 140 some who the Pentagon admits are being held for no reason in Guantanamo, come from more than 40 countries, Paul, and one of those countries being the West Bank, being Palestine. I mean, this great vacuum cleaner operation that the U.S., with no semblance of legality, that the U.S. has followed for the last couple of years is going to, I mean, this is a scandal on the order of the Red Scare after World War I or something. I mean, no tincture of legality about it at all. The UN Commission Against Torture has called in these last weeks for the U.S. to say, to give more information about how it justifies what it's doing in Guantanamo and what indeed is it doing in Guantanamo. The U.S., of course, has not responded.
Yeah, and then there's the case of reported in The Guardian. I don't know if it got to the U.S. press. We could speculate that it probably hasn't. Giannani Magazzini, head of the U.N. Human Rights Office in Baghdad on the ground, has been quoted as saying that some 1,500 detainees are being held in Iraq by government ministries in violation of Iraqi law, and nearly as many are being held by U.S.-led multinational forces without law. So that's 30,000 by my count, and that's probably a very rough count because nobody knows how roughly the count is being done.
Speaking of U.S.-led multinational forces, did you see Cambodia this week said, no, we're not going to send any troops? The U.S. is out beating the bushes looking for more troops for Iraq, and Cambodia responded, gee, we could get killed doing that.
What I heard was they questioned the legality of the whole occupation.
That's
which
right.
They must have been... figured that they were going to get turned down for any carrot they were going to be given in any way, so they weren't losing anything.
Well, one of the stories that I think has not been much repeated this week is how the actual war on the ground is going. We've been hearing all these stories about the formation of a government in Iraq that somehow managed not to mention the United States. But in fact, there has been a change, a quantum leap perhaps, in the fighting in the last week. There was a seven-hour battle within Baghdad itself in which which an insurgent group attacked in broad daylight the American-backed Iraqi troops, and you had a firefight in northern Baghdad for 7 hours. At the same time, there was a daylight raid in Ramadi on these troops. The U.S. is speaking now of a second liberation of Baghdad, which seems to be military speak for more military activities by American troops within the city of Baghdad itself, because the attacks against them have become so serious.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's
yeah.
an admission that they do not have it now. That's precisely what it is. Mm. This change, this ratcheting up of the military situation, or ratcheting down from the point of view of the occupation forces, is really quite serious. At the same time, there is an interesting new challenge has emerged. There is a law that was originally sponsored by Senator Leahy at the time of the Reagan wars in Central America about transferring weapons, and a law that attempted to prevent the transfer of weapons to militias, to death squads, to other groups that were not properly trained or properly under control of Americans. It's been pointed out now that what the U.S. is doing in Iraq is illegal according to that law, and that this attempt for the U.S. to build up, to promote a civil war basically by building up the militias and death squads is illegal in this way, and that's perhaps one of the reasons we've been hearing more talk about American troops involved in the second liberation of Baghdad.
Yeah, I heard about a story that printed in, I think, the mainstream press, but I'm not sure on that, talked about how the U.S. is much more knowingly aiding militia than is generally allowed.
Yes, exactly.
to come up. I don't know where that
that's
story...
Right. No, that's, story it is in the mainstream. It was in the Times.
Yeah.
In fact, the discussion of the Leahy law I saw in the London Times, but I mean the other stuff has made its way into the mainstream press.
Something I just Googled for, I'd heard it also on a chat show, that there's an allegation that members of the Mahdi army are moving up to Kirkuk. And I remember when Aaron Glantz, the guy that wrote the book How the U.S. Lost Iraq, but he suggested that he said that, of course, that has been quoted subsequently, that the Civil War has already started some time ago, but if it really shifted into high gear, it would probably start in Kirkuk. And I don't know. I think I got this from a military interview, that the Mahdi army was supposedly moving up, not in mass, but just sort of gravitating up to Kirkuk.
The reason was that
they want to open another front, not just the second liberation of Baghdad.
Order to suppress the Kurds, in order to try to battle back, the Kurds, Saddam Hussein had moved a lot of Arabs into Kirkuk, which is an oil center as well, and that the Kurds, once Saddam Hussein fell, the Kurds said, "We'd like Kirkuk back, please," and the Americans said, "Well, that's awkward," and and various Arab groups, including the Shia parties, said, no, we're not going to give up what we got.
Yeah.
In other words, the irony here is that they got it under Saddam Hussein.
Yeah, but if you see this as going parallel to the so-called resolution about the government that's coming up, this is one of those fault lines. And
exactly,
yeah,
very much so. Did you see that the CIA dumped Mom? I love the fact the CIA fired a woman on the grounds that she had given the information, leaked information to the Washington Post about the CIA gulag, about the CIA secret prisons. There's a scandal. That's a much more important scandal that much more should be said about. I mean, people like Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and so forth, who disappeared into the American worldwide secret prison system, and God knows what they've done to him. I mean, he apparently was one of the major figures whom they were waterboarding and torturing in other ways. The U.S. was willing to let a guy be let out of jail in Germany on charges of being involved with the 9/11 plot by not producing, as the German courts demanded, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed to talk about what this fellow had to do with al-Qaeda. So these people have disappeared. They are the modern American disappeared. When the information appeared in the Washington Post that these prisons existed around the world. The CIA went aggressively after whoever in the CIA gave the Post the information. Well, they found her. She's mom, Mary O. McCarthy, M-O-M. Mary O. McCarthy has been fired from the CIA for talking to Dana Priest of the Washington Post.
Legal proceedings to follow?
The papers say, well, probably not, because it would be too embarrassing.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. At the same time, today's New York Times describes another high-ranking CIA official describing how the CIA intelligence was discarded, misrepresented, and not used by the government, the Cheney Bush government, which had decided already to go to war. This guy's name is Tyler Drumheller, and he's going to be interviewed on CBS's 60 Minutes Sunday night, giving the story, which we all know, but it's coming once again from the highest level of the CIA. There's a fellow called Paul Pillar, who until last October oversaw American intelligence about the Middle East, who published in the spring issue of Foreign Affairs an account of how the administration lied about what they knew about the Middle East in order to get the Iraq war going.
He had his minutes on 60 Minutes too, actually, some time ago.
But this is important, Paul, because I mean, this sort of people at this level of the CIA coming forward. You say, you know, where were they in the run-up to the war? And that seems to me to be a very good question. But in some ways, it seems to me this is a good deal more significant than the generals saying, we don't like Rumsfeld, because we knew a lot of these generals didn't like Rumsfeld.
Well, I haven't sorted this out. This is from cursor.org, and I've looked at a little bit of it. Features Ken Silverstein, former collaborator with Alexander Coburn.
And Jeff Sinclair, too. Yeah.
Apparently, he got a... got a dump, a leak, as it were, and describes an FBI memo being widely circulated at Langley that suggests the possibility that renditions are still going on.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
Surprise, surprise. The surprise here is, the other part of the sentence is, some CIA agents have refused to take part. Now, we were talking last week about how the fading away slowly but not gracefully Berlusconi government and the judiciary under him refused to extradite the 23 or so CIA agents that nabbed somebody in Milan. But apparently it's still, for some reason, the calculation is sobering that the CIA agents are refusing to follow orders. I don't know whether that kills their career or what.
And the generals thing is still ambiguous. I mean, in spite of what I said a moment ago about that, there is an aspect of that. These things are in some ways connected insofar as some of the generals' objections to Rumsfeld are objections to not so much to what has been done so far, or it may be that too, but more importantly to what they might do. That is an attempt to try to undercut the attack on Iran. I think a lot of the things where we are seeing coming out from the CIA and from their not-so-friendly competitors in the Pentagon actually dovetail in this, that some of it at least is an attempt to try to forestall an attack on Iran.
Well, we didn't say anything about McClellan. I predicted about 3 months ago that he was going to resign, and it finally has come around.
I thought you were going to mention the guy who is replacing Rove, who is responsible for one of your favorite events, the stopping the count of the count.
The Brooks Brothers. Actually, this supposedly is the guy that characterized the riot as a Brooks Brothers riot. These are the people that intimidated the people in Palm Beach to stop counting and recounting the chatty votes.
So he's going to take Rose's place in policy.
Yeah. Well, it's amazing that we haven't said anything about Scott Simon today, but it's interesting to note that a letter to the New York Times actually mentioned that how can Rove be hired by the White House to do political work on the Republican campaign? Isn't there a little bit of a funding problem there? It was written in a letter in the Times, but I guess Daniel Schur used that to maybe came up with it independently. But it is an interesting thing that Rove. I mean, that's what he was doing to begin with. Policy was always subject to,
of course,
to the politics of the thing. That's why we had things like the release of information about this computer whiz in Pakistan right at the time of the last election, when and the Pakistanis, whatever part of the ISI that was actually working with the UK intelligence that was actually trying to trace this guy down, were absolutely outraged that they burned this guy's. He had been not revealed as having been apprehended, and he was still trading email with active Al-Qaeda operatives, but the U.S. needed some kind of trophy capture at that time, right before the election. So the electoral cycle was always dominant over over actual politics. And,
I think that's right, and I think more and more people in this country are coming to understand that far from taking the sort of obvious steps to protect Americans from the threat of terrorism, as they said they were, this government has been perfectly willing to let those threats stand because they're a justification for the forward foreign policy that the U.S. is carrying out in the Middle East and elsewhere. And that's a scandal of fairly high order. We haven't mentioned the fact that our spiritual leader, Noam Chomsky, has just published a new book called Failed States. And he points out that one of the characteristics of a failed state is that it is unable to protect its citizens from depredations from abroad. Well, the Bush-Cheney government has indeed made more likely terrorist attacks on the United States and has not done the simple things to forestall them, precisely because the existence of terrorist threats is a justification for their foreign policy. Now, this is a scandal of very high order, Paul. I mean, this, it seems to me, is a basis of impeachment, is sort of an unquestioned basis for impeachment. That is a high crime and misdemeanor. Many other things you might mention, this ranks up there very highly, and people are coming to understand that, even though it's not talked about in the media.
Speaking of the media and Coburn a little bit, he had a funny thing on the Pulitzers.
Yes.
Talking, and his last line was that we should indict these people for insider dealing because they're basically the people that are on the board of the Pulitzer. They're giving out the awards to to their own papers, and why should Risen get an award, or the New York Times get an award on Risen's behalf
for a story they buried for
11 months
and that would have affected the election. Exactly.
Too, yeah.
Quite right.
Yeah, it's amazing, amazing stuff going down.
Yeah. Alexander Coburn, one of the editors of Counterpunch, has for years jeered at the tendency of the American press to give itself awards. There's a vast number of them. They're passed around amongst a small coterie of people who make sure that the news you get is properly chopped and mixed, and that there is nothing untoward in that mix. New Orleans voting for a mayor this weekend.
Part of New Orleans voting for a mayor.
And a lot of people who should be able to vote are not. The U.S. was able to arrange for a lot of Iraqi exiles people simply out of Iraq to vote by satellite. You could vote in Los Angeles in the Iraq election, but you can't vote in Houston in the New Orleans election. So attempt by primarily business interests to reconstruct a smaller, whiter, more tourist-friendly New Orleans is a particularly nasty story. And out of the almost two dozen candidates running for mayor in New Orleans this weekend, there actually may emerge some distinction about it, some debate about it, because there's going to have to be some sort of runoff.
Yeah. Well, I think it'll be the son of the white mayor. Who was the ex?
Moon Landrieu, Landrieu, who is a lieutenant governor now, is probably if he had to bet it right now.
His sister is a
right wing senator from Louisiana, and there's every reason to expect that he would be the. I mean, he certainly is the one who has been mentioned most by the mentioners. But there we are.
Well, we mentioned him too, but just somehow, given the way this election is going down. And the complexion of the town right now and the people that aren't being allowed to vote, I would gather that might be the current mayor versus Mitch Landrieu. And the fact that we have a son of a white mayor in Chicago and son of a white mayor in New Orleans doesn't sound too implausible.
Dynasties are an American way.
Yeah.
Okay, another anniversary for you, Paul. What happened 45 years ago this week?
Okay.
This one.
what year is that? 45 years ago is
1961.
61.
April 17th, 1961.
Has this got something to do with Cuba?
You got it. Got it in one. Exactly right. The Bay of Pigs. The ill-fated invasion of the Bay of Pigs. The U.S. sends a couple of thousand people into Cuba with the understanding that they will be able to overthrow that government. When it doesn't work, the U.S. launches on a terror campaign against Cuba that has made Cuba clearly the most terrorized state in the Western Hemisphere over the last 45 years.
Left on Kennedy's plate by the Eisenhower administration. Mm-hmm. There are people that attribute it entirely to Kennedy. He did go ahead with it. He did sign
Certainly
off
did.
On it. But the whole mechanism of the operation was already set in place by the outgoing Eisenhower administration, which we know overthrew, you know, the government in Guatemala as well. So,
but even more importantly, and you mentioned Iran takes us back to Iran too, in the first Eisenhower administration, but it was also the Kennedy administration under the personal direction of Kennedy's brother that set up the terror program against Cuba, Operation Mongoose, and that of course was continued by all subsequent administrations as well, down to the point that in even 2 years after 9/11, the U.S. had far more people concerned in the process of terrorizing Cuba than in working against Al-Qaeda attacks in the U.S. So some things don't change.
If you were insomniac, did you also hear the World Service coverage of Cuba's outreach to Pakistan? The U.S. sent two or three mobile medical units. The Cubans sent something like 30. They had 2,300 medical workers in the aftermath of the Pakistan earthquake. I mean, you think the U.S. would have responded by trying to one-up them, and then the Pakistanis would have been better treated, but they didn't rise to the occasion. And
That's
the Cubans
right.
got an incredible outreach to Pakistan.
Well, and, one reason was when the bad weather came, when the cold weather came, the other countries, including the American technicians, all left, and the Cubans stayed.
Which
the
is Cubans harder for them women. To do than the, us.
The Cubans, the Cubans, half the Cuban personnel were female. And that
allowed them to treat the women victims easier.
And you have been listening to News from Neptune, Carl Easterbrook and Paul Muth, talking about the news of the week and its coverage by the media.